Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
You're listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Into continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Sad to see him go. Yeah, I think he's going to the medical examiner. I don't know all the details, but what the family basically wants is just to have him cremated there in Chandler and then shipped, have his cremains shipped to New Orleans. Okay. And we'll deal with the service later. So just trying to get a ballpark price.
Okay. For a cremation, we are able to do our cremation for $1,695. Now, what that's going to include is the transportation into our care, the transportation to and from our crematory, our basic professional fees, as well as our crematory fee. Now, there's going to be a couple other charges there for you. So we are going to have death certificates, which are $20 a piece with a processing fee, $15 permit fee, and then we're able to do that transfer through the mail for you, and that's $150 fee for you.
Okay. UPS or something, I guess.
Okay.
So close, about a 2,000 probably, kind of a ballpark, yes?
Close to, yeah.
Okay. Well, that helps me a lot. I'm going to call one or two others, but I'll get back to you if we come that direction. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. If you need anything else, give me a call.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can I have a sidebar with counsel, please?
Yes.
All right, counsel, we had a sidebar just discussing scheduling here. We're going to go ahead and take the lunch break at this time. I am going to advise the jurors you're going to have a slightly longer lunch break, maybe not slightly, probably more like an hour and a half than an hour based on some motions the court's going to hear outside of your presence during part of that break. So we'll probably have you returning for further evidence, hopefully around 1:30. And if we do that, I'll also inquire as to whether or not you think we could just go through 2 hours without an afternoon break, potentially, if we start up around 1:30. So,
and I believe the state can do so as long as the jurors are good with it.
Okay. I'll ask the jurors once you return back so we kind of know what is left in the afternoon after that. So we will go ahead and take our lunch recess at this time. I'll have the jurors be excused, and we'll argue a brief motion after they've been excused from the courtroom.
All right.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. For those in the courtroom in attendance, you're welcome to stay for a motion hearing. You're also welcome to leave for the lunch break if you'd prefer to do that. It's a motion that we're going to just hear an argument at this time, whether or not it will be open or closed hearing. So if anybody does want to leave for the lunch break, you're welcome to. Otherwise, we'll proceed under this rule 32.
Awesome.
Thank you. We'll have the witness step down and return to. Sorry, I lost track of you still sitting up there. All right, counsel, we've got a motion in limine that was filed on April 15th by the state. It was filed on shortened notice just yesterday. I haven't expected defense counsel to be able to have time to make any filing in response. However, I've allowed Mr. Pryor an opportunity to review the motion and would permit oral argument. That hearing we're going to take up later after our lunch break. The question right now is the state did file this with a request for an expedited hearing, which I'm granting and having that heard on the merits today. Also under a motion requesting that the motion in limine be sealed. The court is holding a hearing at this time to determine on the state's motion whether or not the hearing will be sealed or will it be open. And so that's governed by our Idaho Court Administrative Rules 32. If the state wants to present any argument as to a basis for sealing the hearing this afternoon, I'll hear that at this time, and then I'll hear a response from the defense. So who is going to be arguing as to the motion to seal?
I will be, Your Honor.
Go ahead, Ms. Blake. And so to be clear, not into the merits of the motion in limine, just on the issue of sealing.
Correct. The state did file a brief. I recognize this is short timing, and defense counsel may not have had an opportunity to do the same. In the brief, I think both in the motion to seal and then reference to the brief without getting into any argument, lays out what the state's concern is, depending on any ruling on the motion, is why the state had requested that this be filed under seal. Depending on the outcome, could have an impact in the future. But we do recognize that there is a jury that has been seated at this point, and the court may determine that that is no longer a concern. So we would simply defer to the court on, defer to the court on this and just reference back to the motion as to the state's rationale for the original request.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. What's the defense response as to the issue of sealing or not sealing the upcoming hearing?
Judge, the state correctly pointed out that the jury's been sworn in. The evidence is has proceeded at this point. Without getting into too many factual issues, Judge, the information that's in question was listed as an exhibit and disclosed to the state on March 15th, I believe, originally in the list of exhibits and identified on that date. Then it was provided to them just before the start, a week, I think, before the start of the opening statements, with the actual copy of that. So 3 weeks later now, we're dealing with this. But just so everybody's clear, Judge, the information that I'm intending to use is going to be limited to impeachment. And as we all are aware, that if the information is used for impeachment, it's not necessarily admitted as evidence. But in all fairness to the state, it was provided as an exhibit. But the defense's intention is to use this solely for impeachment evidence.
All right.
So I would expect that this is nothing that needs to be sealed.
Okay. Well, the court in this case has previously many times sealed certain issues relating to evidence, mostly under Idaho Court Administrative Rule 32, which is a long, long rule with a lot of subparts. Somewhere among in there is a paragraph E, which is kind of a catch-all that indicates that things can be sealed if it's necessary to temporarily seal or redact documents to preserve the right to a fair trial. And in this case, of course, we had quite an ordeal and undertaking to find jurors who were not prejudiced by pretrial publicity, and pretrial publicity all seemingly tilted one way in the case where many, many hundreds of potential jurors were unable to serve in this case because they already had a opinion that the defendant was guilty. So avoiding that and trying to get a fair and impartial jury led to the court's orders many times before on that very issue. The issue now where the companion case has already gone through trial, and now we have a jury seated in this case and impaneled, my concern is alleviated as to picking jurors that are not predisposed to a opinion in the case based on pretrial publicity. And so without that concern going forward, the court will determine that the hearing does not need to be sealed. And so under Rule 34, the temporarily unsealed or temporarily sealed motion will be unsealed, as well as the hearing will be conducted in an open hearing today. When we argue that motion, counsel, I don't expect it will take too long to argue, but I indicated to the jurors they'd be back around 1:30 to start evidence again. So if we call the motion at about 5 or 10 after to give us a full hour for lunch and court preparations, is that time frame going to work for the state?
That will work for the state, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. And will you be arguing that, Ms. Blake?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. All right, Ms. Pryor.
And I'll be arguing it for the defense judge.
I understand that. So for terms of timing, then, let's try to get that on the record. Let's call it at 1:05. All right, we'll be in recess on the lunch break until then.
All right.
Witness the lies.
I didn't lie to you on that polygraph, I promise.
The cover-ups.
I could see his brain on his...
The moments they confessed.
I grabbed one of the kitchen knives. I killed him.
Outrageous police interrogations.
I know, I forgot the head. I wanted the head.
You have to see to believe.
Oh my God.
Law and Crime Interrogations. Subscribe today.
District Court's again in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, counsel, thanks for returning. We've got a motion scheduled being heard outside of the presence of the jury. We're on the record on KCR 2221-1623. The state filed a motion in limine yesterday, along with a request to temporarily seal, which, based on a hearing earlier today, is unsealed, as well as the hearing being held in public here. However, again, outside the presence of the jury, I also have granted the hearing to be held on an expedited basis based on the fact that we are in trial and the issue has arisen and developed during trial, which doesn't permit the typical response time we would have for a motion in a case. So based on that, I am going to allow for some argument on the motion in limine. I'll hear response from the defense after the state argues the motion. And after consideration of the arguments, I should be able to make a ruling this afternoon before the jurors return. So, Ms. Blake, I understand you'll be arguing on behalf of the state. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. If you'd like to present argument in support of your motion, limine, I'll hear that at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. And as this court is aware, we've already litigated a very similar issue in front of this court. However, this one deals with a different witness and some different materials. So during preparations in this trial and getting ready for witness prep with one of the witnesses in this case, specifically Melanie Gibb, the state had reviewed a discovery response that was provided by defense counsel. This was provided to us within the discovery timeline as required. This was my first time reviewing it in full. And this had previously been provided by the state, actually, in the prior pending matters against both Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow. They were originally provided in cases CR 2220755 and CR 2220838 on approximately March 3rd of 2021. So defense counsel would have received them in that case initially. Subsequent to that, I believe they were re-provided in this case is discovery on December 14th of 2022. Defense redisclosed them to the state on or about February 1st. As indicated, in preparations for the trial, I had not reviewed those in full until recently. Upon a review of those and then coupled with defense counsel's current state of cross and opening statement, looking at those, the state had concerns that we may be back to litigating in the future the issue of whether or not Prosecutor Wood is a witness. When I reference a previous hearing dealing with a similar issue, it dealt with that, wherein this court determined and quashed a subpoena that had been served on Prosecutor Wood. And while that was in relation to another witness, a review of these coupled with the arguments being made in the state of the cross-examination raised the state's concern that there could be another attempt by the defense to make Prosecutor Wood a witness, and specifically in relation to Ms. Gibb. The state disclosed in this motion the content of the communications that we feel the defense may be relying on or may use. We also have outlined an argument specifically starting with a determination as to whether or not the evidence is even relevant. This court had previously put in effect an order, and in the prior case numbers that were mentioned, the court had also mentioned the requirement for a taint hearing. Although those were in relation to other witnesses than Ms. Gibb, I think it would be a similar standard that should be required or would be required if it is the defense's intent at any point to attempt to call Prosecutor Wood as a witness. The reason the state brought this issue now is we don't want to get through the case in chief and have that become an issue if that's in fact where the defense is headed. We felt that it is an issue that should be determined sooner than later. We have suggested that if the court does have concerns that these could be reviewed in camera and or a hearing could be conducted outside of the purview of the jury for this court to make a determination whether or not any prospective testimony would be relevant to this case and either to the state's case or to the defendant's case. In addition to that, we've outlined and gone through again, and I know the court saw essentially the same case law, the same argument in that previous case, but we did include that we do recognize a defense attorney can be allowed to call a prosecutor and a witness, but it is disfavored. Case law makes that clear, as well as that any attempt to do so should be decided in advance of trial. We've included the case law outlining that, and essentially the test required or the high burden on a defendant to show that a prosecutor would need to be a witness, which is that compelling need test. We don't think that that's been met, and that would be the request if this court is inclined to allow these messages in and or even allow an attempt to have Prosecutor Wood become a witness. We feel that that would be appropriate for the court to conduct a 403 analysis outside of the purview of the jury and or a taint hearing if necessary. We would point out that from the state's review, it is very, very rare for courts to find that a prosecutor should be a witness. And in the cases the state found, it either involved the prosecutor being a witness to the actual facts, so a factual witness to the case, or where they are a witness to a statement that contradicts a later statement made by a victim or a witness, and they are the only available witness to that contradictory statement. So I don't think we're anywhere near that at this point, but the state did have concerns that's where we could be headed. In an attempt to avoid running into that issue down the road, we wanted to address this now. Further, I think it would also, determining before Ms. Gibb takes the stand, kind of what the parameters are with regard to any allowance of those messages and or any parameters surrounding them would be prudent to do outside of the purview of the jury rather than in front of them. So that is the secondary reason for this. Finally, the state would argue that the defendant cannot invite error. We recognize that we are already into the trial. Testimony has already been given. The jury has already heard from the prosecutors in this matter. But we do believe that if there is any attempt to call Prosecutor Wood as a witness, that at this point, any objection to that has been waived by the defense and or would be invited error if we end up at that point. So we would also just note that for the record. But at the end of the day, we are asking the court to consider either excluding the messages and or excluding Prosecutor Wood as a witness or any attempt to call him as a witness. And or if necessary, if the court has additional concerns that a taint hearing be conducted outside of the purview of the jury in order to determine whether or not we would get to that point of the defendant meeting that compelling need, which is a high burden. I think that's all the state has, unless the court has any questions.
All right, I do. The question I have, I understand your motion as it relates to wanting to exclude defense exhibits 113. Also, on the issue of whether or not Mr. Wood could be called to be a witness and invited error doctrine that you've discussed, in your ruling, are you also seeking a specific court ruling as to prohibiting certain types of cross? I know the concern has been raised about the cross and whether or not trying to push into that territory. And in this motion, I guess I'm not entirely clear if you're seeking a ruling when you talk about parameters on disallowing some scope of cross, and if so, what you think the topics that would be disallowed would be.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I think I can try to clarify that. I guess where the state is asking that either the messages be prohibited and or that prosecutor would be prohibited from being called as a witness or the defense be prohibited from attempting to do that. When I talk about the parameters, I guess what I'm suggesting, and maybe it would require an in-camera review by the court, but if this court does determine that prosecutor Wood cannot be called as a witness, I think it would be parameters around the cross of a nature such as that. I guess the state's concern is if the defense is allowed just unfiltered cross completely, and this court has made rulings that they're not going to be allowed to call Prosecutor Wood as a witness, we may still end up in the same position of an attempt to confuse or mislead the jury or to get into parameters or to get into areas that this court has essentially indicated are off limits. So I guess when I reference parameters, depending on the court's ruling, if certain of those messages can't come in, then I would think that those wouldn't be something that we get into cross-examination. Similarly, if Prosecutor Wood's not to be called as a witness, I think the cross would need to be structured in such a way that it isn't suggesting or trying to set up that he would have to be a witness.
All right. Well, I appreciate the additional explanation on that. Mr. Pryor, and I understand this was a hearing expedited, putting you in a tough spot in terms of the time you would have to respond. And I do have that in mind, so I haven't required you to submit any written response or expected it, quite frankly, knowing that we're in trial and this is a very short noticed hearing. However, I do want to give you an opportunity, knowing now that you have had an opportunity to review the state's motion and hear the argument. What is the response from the defense on this motion in limine?
And Judge, for the record, the state provided me their notice on Sunday night, I think at about 11 o'clock, which was a day and a half ago. I didn't get a chance to read it until after court. I was preoccupied the morning of yesterday's court with some other matters relating to this case as well, and eventually had to get to it late last night and took a look at it. This is my concern, is what the state is suggesting is that in some way they can dictate where I can go on cross-examination. They would like this court to enter an order saying, Mr. Pryor can only talk to certain witnesses about certain topics in a certain way, and they're trying to handcuff me from going into areas that they will find maybe a little sensitive to their case. That is extremely problematic. Okay, Judge, I'm going to cite Idaho Code 9-201. And 9-201, and I apologize, I don't have it memorized. My memory isn't as good as it used to be, so I'll have to read from this. But in pertinent part, Judge, it says, who may be witnesses, credibility of witnesses. And I'm not talking about who may be witnesses. I don't have any desire to put Mr. Wood on the stand. That's not what this is about.
And so I do want to be clear on that point. You've said that. I've previously ruled on that in the other cases. And you are representing the court here at this time. You are not intending to call Mr. Wood. Is that correct?
I'm not. And I'm going to follow, although I don't agree with the court's previous order as it related to the other phone conversations with Mr. Wood and the four or five other witnesses in which we ran into some issues about similar problems here. The court made its ruling, and I'll follow the court's ruling. But what I am allowed to do is they provided me with some information in the Chad Daybell's original case. They provided it in Lori Daybell's as well. So they had possession of it. And quite frankly, what it comes down to are emails between Melanie Gibb and Mr. Wood. And Judge, for the record, I'll make it clear that we're not talking about a couple of emails from May 6th of 2020 to 11-4 of 2020. Well, let me change this. In essence, Judge, over a period of time, we're talking of 6 months plus period of time, we're talking about 340 text messages that the two of them exchanged. 143 could be assigned to Mr. Wood. 197 could be assigned to Ms. Gibb. And these are text messages, for pertinent part, address issues relating to this case. Now, one of my concerns, Judge, is this, is that the question I am allowed to ask is, I am allowed to ask, have you had any communication with anybody, prosecutors in this case? And I've done it on previous witnesses here. And what the state would like to do is stop me from inquiring why Mr. Wood has had 340 exchanges of text messages between him and Melanie Gibb over a, well, I want to be careful about what I say here, 5-6-2020 to 11-4-2020, worst portion of those, 7-13-20 to 8-3-20, a two-week period, Judge, from 7-13 of 20 to 8-13 of 20, there were approximately 129 texts over that two-week period. So this is the concern. And again, I'll go back to Idaho Code 9-201, and I'll read, this is the fourth line down. Therefore, neither parties nor any persons who have an interest in the event of a crime, nor persons on account of their opinions on matters of religious belief, although in every case the credibility of the witness may be drawn in question by the manner in which he testifies, by the character of his testimony, or by the evidence affecting his character for truth, honesty, integrity, or his motives, or by contradictory evidence, and the jury are the exclusive jurors of credibility. So what the state is trying to do is basically circumvent Idaho Code 9-201. What they'd like the court to do is they'd like the court to say, Judge, we're not going to let a jury hear what Mr. Wood and Ms. Gibb have been talking about for 340 text messages that are related to this case. And we're not going to allow the court to allow the witnesses to or the jury to judge the credibility of what was said in those text messages. That's what they're trying to do. And Judge, that's in complete violation of 9-201. This isn't a balancing test. That's what the problem with their analysis, Judge, is. They'd love to put you into a taint hearing. The difficulty with a taint hearing, Judge, is this. I don't, you know, 404B, the rules of evidence, 404B, and we touched on this yesterday, Judge. They'd like you to do the relevance of 403 balancing. They'd like you to do 404B and do that. The problem is with 404B, Judge, at the bottom of 404B, you talked about it the other day. It applies to prosecuting attorneys who are trying to bring in prior bad acts. That has nothing to do with this, and this balancing act has nothing to do with this. The reality is this. Does this information go to the credibility of a witness testifying in the case? And what I would suggest to the court is simply this, is that when a prosecuting attorney engages in discussions with a witness to the tune of over a 7 or 8 month period, 340 texts, and I've included them, Judge, I believe it's 113 is my exhibit that I provided.
I do want to clarify. So 113 is a not a summary, but it includes all of these texts you've referenced.
Right.
Okay.
And what 113, Judge, is it's a specific response to discovery that was provided upon seeking some information from the state. And it's A, I believe it's A through K, if I remember. And Judge, this was disclosed by the state 2 or 3 years ago. On the 15th of March of this month, I provided them a list of the exhibits that I was going to provide. And Judge, a week before the trial started, I took the liberty of providing them. I wasn't afforded the same courtesy, but a week before the trial even started, Judge, I handed the state a copy of all my exhibits. That was over 3 weeks ago. So they've had ample time. Last time I've checked, last my count, is there's one defense attorney and there's four prosecuting attorneys. And they should have had ample time to go through my exhibits. And suddenly this last minute quarterbacking of saying, this is a way we're going to stop Mr. Pryor from talking about evidence when we call Ms. Gibb. And I don't appreciate the tactic. I don't appreciate what they're doing here. But the reality is they're not allowed to do it. And under 9201, they don't have the authority to stop me from questioning a witness about communications with either a police officer or a prosecutor and try to show credibility, bias, or motive. And it's not an analysis of what you're looking at in terms of the content of those messages. And there's no authority that I'm aware of other than 90201 that gives them the right to dictate how I engage in cross-examination. Finally, Judge, I've made a representation to the court and I'm standing by that representation. I do not intend on calling Mr. Wood. What I do intend on doing is have when Ms. Gibb's up there and either on my direct examination when she's called back or on my cross-examination, I'm going to call Ms. Gibb and I'm going to question her about what kind of contact she's had with Mr. Wood over a certain period of time and the nature of those discussions. And I have copies of all the emails and I can question her. If she remembers the conversation and is able to discuss it, there's no need for me to publish it. But if she can't remember it, Judge, I have every right to refresh her recollection with copies of those emails. And I have every legal right to do that. And if that means that I show her copies of those emails to refresh her recollection, I can do that. That doesn't mean I need to call Mr. Wood. All I'm asking her to do is to recall a discussion she had with him about the case and the subject of that, of those emails text messages between him and Ms. Gibb. And that's totally permissible. There is no limitation, nor is there any definition on what I can use to refresh a witness's recollection. I have free rein to use any information I feel fit to put it in front of a witness and say, will this help you refresh your recollection about testimony? And that's exactly what I intend to do.
All right. I will note, Mr. Pryor, on the issue of whether or not you intend to call Mr. Wood, we just before trial had a hearing where the court quashed a subpoena that was served on Mr. Wood. So I certainly understand the state's concern about a tactic, if it is, from the defense to call a prosecutor in the case. We've been through that since these previous cases, the 2755 and 838 cases, dealt with that extensively in written rulings. It's been going on for several years now, the same issue, and the courts ruled multiple times going through that analysis and again cited in the state's brief about, and I do agree with the way the state has framed the issue. Looking at the State versus Aguilar case, 135 Idaho 894, that it is very disfavored for a prosecutor to be called. And in those rare circumstances where they are an actual observing fact witness, or perhaps the only other witness that could corroborate some testimony or something, besides that, they have to show, in order for a prosecutor to be called, that the testimony would be vital to the case and the inability to present the same facts from another source. So again, with the subpoena being served just before trial, I'm not surprised the state still has that concern. And I will indicate, without additional need for argument from the state on the invited error doctrine, I would agree with that as well, that if that were a strategy here to not have the issue come to the forefront before trial started, and then attempt to do that, unless it somehow met that very narrow structure that is laid out in the case law, I don't see that happening here. However, I do want to hear some additional argument back from the state on the issue of the Exhibit 113, the communications, and whether or not Mr. Pryor should appropriately be allowed to use that as a way to question the credibility of the witness or potentially impeach if there's contradictions in what the witness may say versus what could be contained in 113.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I guess to be clear, the state is not in any way trying to stop the defendant from being able or the defense from being able to conduct appropriate cross-examination. I guess I disagree a little bit. I think the court does have the ultimate discretion over the allowance of cross-examination in compliance with the rules of evidence to make sure people stay within the bounds. What the state has concerns about was any attempt by defense to misconstrue the content or attempt to create a situation where the defense then argues, well, we have to put prosecutor Wood on the stand, and especially without conducting any kind of a hearing in advance. The state does appreciate the comments made by the defense that there is no intent to call Mr. Wood as a witness. I guess it still makes the state a little bit nervous because, as the courts pointed out, we've litigated this issue multiple times. The state also recognizes that sometimes trial strategies change. And if at any point that does, the state still doesn't want to end up in that position. Because I guess while defense says we're just going to question her and maybe show her the messages, it still creates a concern for the state that then later the defense is going to say, given her answers, given something, we now think we have to call Prosecutor Wood. So while I appreciate the representations made by defense counsel, I think that is still the concern surrounding these messages. The state does not disagree that so long as the defense counsel sets the proper foundation, he would be able to absolutely use these messages if he were trying to introduce them. I guess I should be clear on the proper foundation. I don't disagree. I don't think the state disagrees at all that cross-examination can include asking about meeting with the state, meeting with investigators. That would all be fair game. The concern would be an attempt to misconstrue the statements. And that was why the state was asking the court to potentially review them in camera to make any ruling regarding those messages or conduct a taint hearing if necessary. I think the court was very clear with defense counsel that if there was going to be an attempt to call Prosecutor Wood, a taint hearing would be required. I guess the state is not still completely assured that this would not still result in that attempt to essentially circumvent the court's prior orders. So that's the concern with the state.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Mr. Pryor, Ms. Blake was still talking, so I'm sure that didn't come on the record. What did you say?
If I could respond briefly, Judge.
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge, I've already assured the court, and I'm not going to violate the court's order about Mr. Wood. And frankly, the state can say if certain things happen, but the reality is this. This court can make rulings on relevance issues as it relates to certain things. But when we're talking about credibility, Idaho Code 9201 allows me the leeway to go forward and impeach a witness or ask a witness about communications with a prosecuting attorney. And it's perfectly permissible. Just because Ms. Gibb may say something different than what a text message is, I can show her, refresh her recollection, and that's as far as it goes. And I understand that. I understand the limitation that's put on impeachment and refreshing someone's recollection. It doesn't open the door, and the state's using this opportunity to say, well, Judge, in the past, you've stopped Mr. Pryor from having him talk about his many conversations with the other witnesses. But in this situation, it's a different story. Ms. Gibb is the witness in this case. Her testimony is crucial to the state even trying to prove their case. And the reality is that I'm allowed to talk about communications with Mr. Wood and Ms. Wood, Mr. Wood and Ms. Gibb, to the tune of 340 text messages over a little more than a 6-month period. So I am allowed to go into that, and I'm going to content if that content. So the suggestion is that there should be a taint hearing. They are completely off base, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to, you know, strap a motion that has previously been ruled on and say, Judge, oh, there still may be some threat here. We really better go through this long process and have you evaluate things. And I'm going to object if that's where we're going. I'm allowed to go into the credibility, bias, and motives behind any witness. And I'm allowed to question them about anything that may go to bias, motive, and in that regard. So I appreciate the state conceding, finally, that I can use this information on cross-examination and judge as a representation on cross-examination and maybe direct examination when Ms. Gibb is subpoenaed. That's where I intend to go. And again, I will reiterate, I do not intend to call Mr. Wood, nor do I plan some scheme. Sounds a little paranoid to me, but that's fine. But again, I'm going to follow this court's order. But 9201 allows me to go into the credibility of the witnesses, and I don't feel like I need permission to do that.
All right. The matter's been argued. I am ready to make a ruling on it. So I am going to put the ruling on the record. I'll just have an order entered that will say for the reasons stated, because I don't expect either side to draft out in an express order the analysis I'll go through here. So as it relates, first of all, I'll indicate that 9201, of course, reiterates the provenance of the jury, that they're the ones that determine credibility of witnesses ultimately, and that clearly states that. The matter of evidentiary ruling and relevance is always, though, for the court to determine what evidence comes in or what does not come in based on objections or proffers during the trial. And the court always has to consider Idaho Rule of Evidence 401, which is whether or not evidence is relevant, and 403, which is potentially, even though there is some relevance, evidence can be excluded if the evidence is unfairly prejudicial more than probative. And so the court determines that, and that doesn't run afoul of 9201, as the defense has argued it anyway, or the two are mutually compatible in that it's the court that will determine relevance based on 401 and 403, and then the jury's left to determine ultimately if a witness is credible or not. So in this issue here with Exhibit 113, I will indicate that much like the parties here, the court's busy as well during trial, I have not gone through Exhibit 113, and nor I don't know if I want to or care to read the hundreds and hundreds of text messages that are apparently, or other messages that are contained in the exhibit. Without knowing precisely what's in all of those, I can't make a ruling to just wholesale exclude Exhibit 113 as the motion in limine would seek, and state that that's an irrelevant exhibit. Parts of it may be, parts of it may not be. The whole thing may not be relevant. The whole thing may be relevant. I just can't say at this point until the witness, Ms. Gibb, testifies. I would state that to the extent anything comes up within those messages that may well be proper on cross-examination as impeachment if the witness begins contradicting things that were previously said to the prosecutor, or vice versa, or on other factual allegations that may come up during cross or direct. So the court's going to deny the motion as it relates to a motion to in limine to just exclude Exhibit 113. Just have to see how the trial develops with the testimony of that witness. However, I will state that I'll be watching very carefully as to whether or not there really is any relevance to the testimony of Ms. Gibb, because attorneys are entitled to talk to witnesses, help them get ready for trial, not to change their testimony or not tell the truth. However, if it's just simply matters of, you know, what time should I be there, that kind of thing, if it's not relevant, then I'm going to watch. And if an objection comes up about relevance on any of these prior communications, despite 9201, I can simply determine if I think it's appropriate that the jurors shouldn't be hearing about these communications if it does nothing to help them assess the credibility of the witness. So ultimately, it has to be an assessment of the witness's credibility. Quite frankly, I don't think a taint hearing is necessary or required at this point. If during the course of that testimony, we start going right into this, and it looks like there may well be an issue if that were to come up with credibility relating to Exhibit 113, I do agree that that should be done either in camera or at least outside of the presence of the jurors to avoid any unnecessary confusion the jurors may have sorting out what that would mean if it doesn't go directly to the credibility of that testimony. As it relates to Mr. Wood potentially being called as a witness, there's been a representation to the court today. That's not what the defense intends to do. This court's previously ruled that was not going to happen. I still don't intend to have that happen. I can't say that could never happen because anything is possible, particularly it seems in this case. I'm not going to predict what may or may not come out, but I don't see much of a path forward given how strict the analysis is to permit that. So absent some really surprising or extenuating development, Mr. Wood's not going to be called as a witness and not would not be permitted to under the controlling law. And finally, on that invited error doctrine, again, as I mentioned, to the extent this would be some sort of invited error, I would watch for any objection to stave that off if we started getting into an issue that could potentially bring a motion for a mistrial. So the ruling at this time then is on those matters, Mr. Wood's not going to be called as a witness. The Exhibit 113 is not excluded, but the court will watch for any relevance objections if the state believes it's not relevant. And that's the ruling on the motion.
Thank you, Judge.
All right. Ms. Blake, do you have any questions on that ruling?
I do not, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. And counsel, one final thing, as I mentioned, if it becomes necessary for either an in-camera review or just argument outside the presence of the jury, please try and flag that or I will sua sponte before bell gets rung in front of the jurors. They shouldn't be hearing. So that will conclude then the ruling on the motion. At this time, if we are ready, we'll have the jurors brought back in to continue testimony.
Yes, sir. Aye.
President.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. All right. We are on the record on case CR 22211623. The jury has returned, is all properly seated. Thank you for your patience while we went through a couple of matters outside your presence today. It would be the intent of the court then to go straight through, tell our time to end today at 3:30. Everybody on the jury okay with that plan? Okay, if anybody for whatever reason does need some break, just notify the bailiff. Otherwise, we'll intend to go through the afternoon. Ms. Blake, I believe you're still on direct examination with Detective Duncan. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
All right, if you'd like to recall the witness, then we'll have them brought in.
The state would call Detective Duncan.
All right, Detective Duncan has returned to the stand. Let me just inquire. I'm not singling you out, by the way. I do this with every witness when I remember. But over this break, did you discuss your testimony with anyone else or anybody else's testimony? Okay, thank you for confirming that. Ms. Blake, if you'd like to inquire, I'll remind the witness you're still under oath and you may question.
Thank you. Detective Duncan, before the break, we had just heard two calls that were linked to the same mortuary call. Do you recall those?
I do, yes.
And you recovered those as part of the investigation?
Yes.
And I believe you indicated the FBI had actually requested you collect those calls.
Correct.
And prior to today, had you heard those?
I have, yes.
Have you heard Chad Daybell's voice?
I have.
Were you able to recognize the voice on that call?
Yes, I was.
And who was that?
Chad Daybell.
And during the call, did you hear him use any other name than Chad Daybell?
I heard him use a different spelling of the last name, yes.
And in that call, do you recall him saying where he was hoping to send the remains to once they were cremated?
I do.
And where was that?
Louisiana.
Do you know where Charles Vallow's place of birth was?
Louisiana.
Do you know if he still had family living there?
Yes, he did.
Did you also hear Chad give a location for himself where he was currently located in that call?
He indicated that he was in Iowa.
Through your investigation, did you ever find anything indicating Chad was in Iowa?
Did not.
And we've talked about that in your investigation, you looked at the iCloud accounts for Lori.
Yes.
Do you recall locating a copy of a patriarchal blessing?
There is an audio recording of a patriarchal blessing on Lori's iCloud account.
Did you listen to that blessing at some point?
I did.
And do you know who was giving the blessing?
Chad Daybell.
Do you know who he was giving the blessing to?
Alex Cox.
Are you familiar with what faith the patriarchal blessings are attached to?
I am.
And what faith is that?
It's with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And are you familiar with whether or not Chad Daybell within the church would have been authorized to give an actual patriarchal blessing?
Sustained. And Ms. Pryor, your microphone next time, please.
Detective, as part of the investigation, did the LDS faith come up?
Yes.
Did you review some things in relation to that faith?
I did.
And do you have some basic knowledge regarding the LDS church?
Yes, I do.
Do you know what a patriarchal blessing is?
I do.
Do you know who's authorized to give those within the LDS faith?
The stake president is authorized to give those.
Do you know what, if Chad held the calling of a stake president at the time the blessing was given?
My understanding, he did not.
So he would not have been authorized within the LDS faith to give that blessing?
Correct. I think it actually, correct myself, like it's a stake patriarch that gives that blessing, not a president, but a patriarch.
So it's a specific calling someone has within the LDS faith to be able to give those blessings to another person?
Yes, it is.
And Chad did not hold that calling?
My understanding, he did not.
And Your Honor, the iCloud accounts have been admitted into evidence. The state has what's been marked as State's Exhibit 50, which is the reference to recording, where those iCloud accounts are already in evidence by stipulation. The state would move for the admission of State's Exhibit 50.
No objection, Judge.
Okay. Exhibit 50 is entered, and counsel, again, to be clear with those accounts, et cetera, as each individual item comes in into evidence, as you just did, Ms. Blake, continue to please reference those specifically so the record remains clear.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state would ask for permission to publish State's Exhibit 50.
You may publish.
Chad Daybell, it is November 24th, 2019, Sunday afternoon, 5:15 p.m. We are going to give Alex Lamar Cox a patriarchal blessing.
Alexander Lamar.
Mm-hmm. Alexander Lamar Cox. On this special day, I lay my hands upon your head to give you a patriarchal blessing. As part of the member of the Church of the Firstborn that you have earned the privilege to be a member of, I do so by the power of the Melchizedek priesthood which I hold, and in the name of Jesus Christ, our Savior, who has authorized this blessing, I'm just grateful that you are receiving it as you move forward in your life. You are a member of the House of Israel, of the 12 tribes, and you are a descendant of Joseph through the tribe of Ephraim, which grants you many blessings, particularly of spreading the gospel in these latter days and protecting and preserving those who seek to learn the truth. And that has been your mission on this earth, and it will now expand into ways that we will discuss further in the blessing. I want to begin by opening up portals of time and going back to your previous creations in which you've lived. I see you on the third creation as a valiant warrior fighting for truth and righteousness, always seeking to do what is right. Then you progressed and were selected by the Savior himself to be part of the fourth creation. Great warriors were needed in that creation. Powerful goddesses were needed to be protected, and you were selected to help protect your sister, and you helped her in numerous probations as a defender. You have a special bond even from the premortal world. You connected there, and as she grew in power, you were right there beside her, always, with a humble heart. You both always were so humble. So as this fifth creation began, after you had been exalted in the fourth creation, when you could have gone on to exaltation with Holly, resurrected being, you accepted the Savior's invitation one more time to come to this mortal realm to condescend as a God. You help us. You have already assisted us in ways that can never be repaid. And you will continue to do so as you move forward in this life. You were born into a family that needed you desperately, with a set of parents who spoke of the gospel with their mouths, yet did not live it. And once again, you were reunited with a sister who needed you to survive such an environment. In no way was it a reflection on either one of you that you lived in that home. You were put there to help each other persevere, but the lessons you had to learn in your youth have now made you both strong, powerful servants of the Lord that would not have occurred in a traditional LDS home. You had to go to great depths to achieve tremendous heights. And the fruits of those trials are beginning to be demonstrated. You were granted to be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that was a strength to you. You learned about your Savior and grew closer to Him and rekindled in some ways the connections you've always had with Him. And through adulthood, you have refined yourself. And I just want you to know that at this time, the Savior is saying unto me, well done. Thy soul is cleansed. All is well. And now you'll begin into your terrestrial phase of this existence, that you'll be a powerful servant. I bless you with that knowledge that you'll now move forward as a true warrior in ways that can be demonstrated through not only physical action, but through spiritual power that is coming to you and will be bestowed upon you. I bless you with the knowledge that through marriage, you'll be united with a partner who will match your powers and complement your strength. You'll be known throughout the world for your good-heartedness, your willingness to save souls all over the world through portals, and you will begin to gather the souls that come unto Christ. I see you in New Jerusalem, but more importantly, I see you as a messenger of the Lord. Surrounding New Jerusalem will be many small communities where people will come who aren't quite ready to enter those heavenly gates, those terrestrial gates. And one of your missions will be to go among the people and testify as a prophet that they can make it. You'll share your own experiences of overcoming adversity. And through your example, they will rise up. You will give tremendous blessings to them, raise their vibrations, and be like a brother to many of these fathers who may have had doubts. But through your strength, they will look to you as a hero. And you'll bring entire families that have been sanctified to the gates of New Jerusalem, and they will be allowed in on your word. Oh, me, just one of the many wonderful experiences you'll have. I see you doing that often, but then based on assignments, you might go further into the world. Always serving, always a missionary. With your companion, you communicate with Mother Earth herself. You'll know where to be before natural disasters happen, that you can be on location to protect key leaders, church leaders, and to preserve who should survive. Little children, I see you gathering up little children in your arms, saving them from floodwaters. Just having a collage of moments that await you in this life, rescuing the pure and innocent, leading them to safety, dozens of instances. And you will be looked upon as an angel on earth. You'll literally glow for those who are allowed to see you. And those mortals who aren't allowed to see that will know through the spirit of the great power you possess. Proper time, after many years of service in such ways, as the second coming approaches, you will know when it's time to move to the other side. This body that has served you well will lay down one day, and you'll pass. Your spirit will leave this body, and you'll be greeted wholeheartedly and welcomed by the Savior himself. You will already know him, but that reunion will take place on a greater plane. But the spirit, you'll feel that at that time, the vibration will exceed all. Before the second coming even occurs, the Savior will let that body rest a day or two, and much like himself, you will be raised and be resurrected. So that when the Savior does return, you will be right at the front of that amazing team of angels who will sweep the earth, much like described in the renewed earth. You will be there. It will bring you great joy to help Mother Earth transfer to a terrestrial realm, to burn away the celestial refuse. At that time, you and Holly will still have assignments here temporarily, but then you'll move forward. She's already preparing a world for you too, and you will be able to be an eternal family with eternal children on that earth, and the glory will just continue for you out on and on through eternity. So we bless you at this time with strength, power, and dominion over the callings you'll receive, and that you are part of a very special team of people that are moving towards translation and transfiguration, and that the Lord will be with you at all times. You will be a patriarch in your own home. You will give blessings similar to this. Your veil will be essentially gone. You will be able to see into the past and into the future for these individuals and share with them the same type of knowledge and truth. We bless you with protection throughout your mortal life, that angels will now be assigned to you. As you've reached this vibration, you have 9 angels assigned to you now to watch you from all sides.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.